are here with Truth News Radio Australia on the 23rd of August 2014. My name's Herewood Fenton. Welcome to the show. We have a two-hour show lined up for you today, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be dealing, as always, with extremely problematic topics. We're going to be engaging with what I believe to be evidence that your government and most of the so-called civilized democratic world has gone insane. And it's a very difficult realization to come to, because it really changes the game. It changes how we have to think about our own lives, and it probably changes the goals we need to be setting for ourselves. We can't simply let the system continue on, because the system is broken and it is heading towards the edge of a cliff, led by people who are clinically crazy. And it's a mental problem, it's an emotional problem, it's a spiritual problem which afflicts everyone in the political class, everyone who is in positions of control, whether that even be in business or high-level academic disciplines or medicine or science or indeed your government. I know that's a very, very extreme statement to make, and I assure you it's not made lightly, and I wish it were not the case. I really do, because I would like to let those who are good at what they do run things, you know, do the scientific research, protect our sovereignty, manage the economy, you know, and I would get on with the things that I want to do. And that's how we could have a productive future for our lives and for civilization. But that's not possible. The virus of extreme egotism, extreme dysfunctional narcissistic psychopathology has taken over, as it has in the past. This is not something that is altogether new in human history. I mean, look at Europe during the fascist era. Look what happened to Japan around the same time. Go back and look at the Crusades. Look at the Roman Empire. Look at what the colonial empires did during various periods of expansion in Africa and the Far East. Human history is littered with examples of this problem, I would say, this disease, this affliction. And I think it's cyclical. I think we're in the kind of uptick of a really bad eruption of this type of psychopathology. And of course, we are seeing horrific manifestations of this in the news with the publication of beheadings and all of that monstrous stuff that's been coming out of the Middle East. And of course, the people doing that are part of it. There's no doubt about it. But what I want to really focus on is at a higher level, because there is a higher level psychopathology going on. At the moment, the focus in the news with all these atrocities is for us to be horrified by beheadings, horrified by this ISIS organization which wants to form an Islamic caliphate and will stop at nothing to achieve its ends, wants to blow up major cities in the US, as the latest reports have indicated, and that they have a ancient, archaic notion of human society, which is absolute obedience, and any deviation from that resulting in extreme punishment for the purpose of example, for the purpose of shock and horror. And that's terrible. But what we need to confront, and we need to confront this very directly, is that the scenario that has allowed these rampant maniacs to have so much power and influence, this has been engineered by those who run the governments of the West. It has been engineered from top to bottom. And I'm not saying they direct the activities of these people. They don't say, you know, you're going to go and behead James Foley today. Of course not. Of course not. What they do is they create the means by which this can occur. They cultivate what they call infiltrators in some of these groups. They cultivate them as part of what is defined as some sort of intelligence operation. But in doing so, they actually create the very demon they're fighting. They provide money, they provide arms, and the demons that they create serve very clear strategic interests for the governments that are involved in creating them. And at the moment, there is just a massive destabilization campaign in the Middle East and also in the Ukraine, which is to destabilize, to unseat the very strong and potentially threatening alliance between Russia, Iran, and Syria, which is a threat to the hegemonic goals of the true psychopaths, the true monsters, which are the people who run the United States and the UK and the EU. And I'm not saying it's the prime ministers or the presidents or the political leaders. It's the people who run these countries, and most of them live in the shadows. We don't even really fully know who they are. And this, is a terrible situation to be in. It can be defined under the word cryptocracy. There is a cryptocracy. Cryptocracy means a system of governance wherein those who rule are hidden. That is where we find ourselves today. And we see our leaders reporting to these masters. We see them regurgitating policies that are purely driven by the goals of those true rulers, which completely contradict the overt and stated aims of our own leaders. But I digress. I really need to give you now a quick overview of what we are going to be talking about in the rest of today's show. Coming up after the break, I have activist David Heap coming on to talk about the next planned relief ship, which will be going to Gaza to bring aid and comfort to the people of Gaza who have been suffering the massacres, the mass murder perpetrated by the Israeli government with the green light and the strong approval of our own government here in Australia. we'll be talking about the previous aquatic expeditions that have been to Gaza or been turned away. Most of them have indeed been turned away. Back in 2008, a number of ships actually did manage to get through. But ever since about, I think, late 2009, the IDF, under direction, you know, strong direction from the powers that be in Israel, have simply refused access to any relief ships while maintaining an absolutely rigid blockade of the borders. So we'll be talking about the plans to bring supplies to Gaza, and I'll be asking, you know, what the prospects are that this particular expedition will get through. So that's coming up just after the break in a few minutes. Now, in the second hour of today's show, folks, I have a great one-hour interview with one of our favorite guests on this show, Mimi Alhem, a.k.a. Syrian Girl, who is a native of Syria who lives in Australia. She has a YouTube channel, which is very, very popular. She does a lot of interviews on other news networks, such as Press TV. Mimi, for a long time, was anonymous on YouTube until she sort of came out to indicate that she was actually in Australia. She built quite a large following. She's very passionate about her country, and she's done considerable independent research and really raised a lot of important information, particularly about things like the foreign mercenaries who have been in Syria, some of them actually working under the guise of CNN and, you know, acting as news reporters while at the same time engaging in mercenary activities. But beyond that, Mimi actually has quite a keen interest in looking at the whole global situation. And I'm going to be talking to her not just about Syria. I'm going to be talking to her about the whole conflagration that's going on at the moment. We'll be touching on Gaza. We'll be touching on Iraq. We'll be talking about ISIS in Iraq. We'll be talking about Syria. We'll be talking about the bigger goals, the end game, the jockeying for power, and we may even pull in China and Russia into that discussion. Most of what we have to talk about today is really not going to be in the area of bringing you some startling new information, and a lot of it, what we really have to do is simply reflect on the absurdity of it, because really there is so much paradox, there is so much contradiction, and I want to demonstrate a little bit of that for you later. But we simply have to reflect on it. We have to bear witness to the madness that we live within. We're going to break now. I'll be back after the break with David Heap talking about the next expedition to Gaza. Stay with us. Men and women of Earth, may I have your attention? This is Herewood Fenton, host of Truth News Radio Australia. You're invited to join the info war as we work to restore truth in media and challenge the dark forces which now dominate mainstream news. I'm calling on you, valued listener, to use your hard-earned dollars to help us smash the globalist empire. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe today. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. Well, folks, today we are going to be talking a little bit about the Gaza situation. I've done several shows on this already, and I'm certainly not going to stop. There is a great need to break the blockade. And the blockade is one of information, but it's also one of physical resources, which are in great shortage in Gaza. And I have with me on the line today David Heap, who is, as we speak, part of a group organizing to try and send another ship, or perhaps a flotilla of ships, to Gaza to bring aid and to break the blockade of Gaza. David Heap, welcome to Truth News Radio.
Glad to be with you on your show today.
And it's certainly great to have you aboard. Now, I would like to know everything about what you're planning with the current voyage to Gaza. Perhaps you could just tell us a bit about the background of your group, because I think you were actually involved with the previous expeditions which were actually blocked by the Israeli government.
Yeah, I haven't been involved in all of the voyages over the years. I mean, there have been civil society organizing to sail to Gaza since 2008. And while people don't actually know about that, you mentioned the media blockade and the information blockade. One of the main things people need to know that is that in 2008, there were actually five successful voyages that reached Gaza, and some of them left again without any violence, without any problem, without any security issues, and certainly without representing any security threat to the state of Israel, which has been the excuse that was used to stop your sailings, right? So those voyages prove that really what we're doing doesn't need to be a problem, right? I mean, it's the choice of the occupying army to make this into what they call a security threat and to turn the whole thing violent, which they chose to do around the end of 2008 to 2009 at the time of Operation Cast Lead, against Gaza. So the flotilla idea, those were individual small boats sailing. The flotilla idea came around in 2010 as a response to that. I wasn't involved. I was involved in Gaza Palestine Solidarity, but I wasn't involved in the sailing in 2010 that your listeners probably heard of when the Mavi Marmara was attacked.
Yeah.
Our movement in Canada really came about as a result of the attack on the Mavi and the rest of that Freedom Flotilla, when people said to us, when will there be a Canadian boat? When will we be joining this flotilla? And, you know, when you're involved in a civil society movement in the streets and people say to you, not could we do this? Would it be possible? But when are we going to be doing this? That's a pretty clear signal that we need to get on board. So we've started organizing in 2010 for the 2011 sailing. And actually the Canadian boat to Gaza was we called it the alphabet soup boat. It was the ABCD boat. It was Australian, Belgian, Canadian, Danish people that ended up sailing as part of that flotilla. And I had the honor of sailing. Well, we tried to sail from Greece and were locked down in Greece in June, July 2011. And actually we sailed in an action we called Freedom Waves to Gaza. And later in 2011, in November 2011, again, was Canadians, United States representative and an Australian, as well as some international media in November 2011. And we were able to sail from Turkey in the company of the same boat, the Canadian boat, with an Irish boat, the Sirsha. And we got to about 40 or 50 nautical miles off the coast of Gaza in international waters before we were intercepted by the Israeli Navy, you know, kidnapped at sea, but we're in international waters, our boats seized. We were actually held a bit longer than some of the other flotilla participants. We were in Israeli prison for 6 days before we were deported. So that was 2011. And as following that, we also participated. We were support for the 2012 sailing of the Estelle, the Swedish ship. And we followed that with the most recent campaign, which is Gaza's Ark, where we had, again, an international campaign, which was rebuilding a boat in Gaza to sail outward against the blockade. So it's the common feature here is it's a civil society organization. These are grassroots, nonviolent, direct action-oriented groups which oppose the blockade, not just in our words and our public education, which is extremely important, but also sending direct action, sending a boat or one or more boats to directly oppose the blockade, because it is illegal to hold a civilian population captive in that way and prevent them from enjoying the same freedom of movement everybody has a right to. So we were involved in that for the last a little bit more than, well, actually about 2 years in Gaza's Ark, which unfortunately came to an end last month with the most recent assault against the Palestinians in Gaza.
Right. So it's been a pretty sad run for the last few years trying to help Gaza. Just a question about the Israeli response to these ships. Is there any attempt to basically negotiate, or does the Israeli Defense Force just unilaterally act? I got the impression, certainly from the news coverage, that there was no attempt on their part to maybe just talk to you, find out maybe even have a look at what you've got on board the ship and maybe assess it. Like there seems to be no negotiation taking place.
This is the thing about state actors, is they don't really negotiate with civil society groups like our own. So, I mean, let's distinguish two phases. Before we sail, there's a lot of blustering about how this is dangerous, this is unnecessary, we don't need to go this way, we should go through proper channels. Our position, of course, is that the proper channel towards freedom is through freedom, right? And you don't negotiate other people's human rights to freedom of movement with state actors. But that quote-unquote negotiation isn't direct. So they're making press statements. They've communicated to some of us through our own governments. The Canadian government, like your own and many others, unfortunately, are very complicit with the occupation of Palestine.
Yes.
So they send us messages through our government about how dangerous this is, and they can't be responsible for our safety and so forth. When we sail, they begin a bigger propaganda effort. So when we were in Greece, there was sort of a full court, full press propaganda war against us. When we sailed from Turkey in November 2011, there was also, I mean, as soon as they hear about us, they said, oh, they're sailing towards Israel. Well, I mean, none of us have ever had any interest in sailing towards Israel. We're sailing from international waters towards Palestinian waters. So this is sort of not negotiation. It's misinformation, right? And of course, they have the means to misinform on a grand scale. In the moment, when they're finally approached by, in our case, there were five or six large naval vessels. There was air coverage, aircraft coverage, and there were a dozen or more small attack boats of the kind they used to harass and threaten, and fishing boats in Gaza, you know, with water cannons and so forth, and you know, heavily armed troops. At that point, the negotiation consists of them hailing us first by radio and then by bullhorns, because they cut out our, you know, it's going to go bad when they cut out all the communication, right? This is a sign of a state that knows that what they're going to do, they don't want coverage, they don't want the world to know what they're about to do.
Yeah.
So at that point, the negotiation is basically trying to intimidate us into, I mean, they would say to board our vessels to make sure everything is safe. But once they board, they know that they just simply take because they're armed, they have the force of arms, they take over and steal the vessels, right? I mean, this is basically state piracy. This is
indeed
stealing a vessel high seas, which they've no right to do. And we can contrast it again with the successful voyages in 2008. When they hailed them, they asked, for example, who is on board, you know, who's traveling here, what's your destination, what's your cargo, and then let them through, right?
Yeah.
So if they're simply concerned about things like that, they could ask about the inspections at the port of origin, because, you know, these boats are looked at before they leave, and it's quite well documented that the sort of things that are on board are humanitarian aid.
Yeah, and I imagine wouldn't have rejected an inspection. Like, you wouldn't have said, no, you're not allowed to have a look. You would have been happy for them to inspect, even though they don't really have jurisdiction, because you're actually going to Gaza, you're not going to Israel, but you probably would have acceded to such a request.
Well, what we've asked for consistently are inspections at point of origin, which is the norm for civilian commercial shipping, right?
Sure.
So whether we started, early voyages started from Cyprus, there were a number of voyages from Greece, there have been some voyages that started from Turkey. You know, all of those places have maritime authorities, and for that matter, UN offices, which could inspect ships and see what's actually on board. But they won't get involved in that, because the logic of the occupation is increasingly total control and totally violent and military.
We're just going to break. Sorry to interrupt. We're just going to break here with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We'll be right back. welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And my guest today is David Heap, and we are talking about plans to send another ship to Gaza. We've just been talking there about previous expeditions and problems that have occurred. What sort of reception are you expecting to get from the Israel Navy this time, David?
Well, as I said before, the way these voyages end is the choice of the occupier, not our choice. We're a peaceful coalition of civil society groups. You know, in Canada, there's Australian groups, there's European groups. We are joined by South Africans. So it's it depends on the occupier, which in turn really depends on world public opinion, right? I mean, Israel continues their blockade as they continue their occupation because the governments of the world allow them to get away with it. So really the most important part of our work is addressing public opinion in the countries where the people that sail come from, and changing hearts and minds there, yeah, so that people make it clear that we won't tolerate our government's continued complicity with the occupation and with the blockade in particular. Yeah. So whether we're attacked or not is, as I say, entirely the choice of the occupier. We simply make it clear that our cargo is, in this case, will be humanitarian goods that are requested by our civil society partners in Gaza. We're not, obviously, we're obviously not armed. We have people that are committed to nonviolence on board. And our appeal really is to world public opinion, to the conscience of humanity, to say that we're sailing not because, not just because the Palestinians of Gaza are in great need following the most recent assault. You know, there's no supplies in the hospitals, very little fresh water and so forth, but fundamentally because they have a right to freedom of movement.
Yeah.
And that's what's denied to them during the assaults, but also day in, day out, year in, year out, by the occupation and by the blockade of Gaza.
Absolutely. I mean, you're highlighting the lack of sovereignty, the offence against international law that that an independent state can't manage its own borders. It has this big brother system with Israel controlling all its borders on every side. It is such an intolerable situation. And, you know, living in Australia, we are subjected to the continual bombardment of the pro-Israel point of view on this, and it is just incredibly sad to see the lack of common sense in it, because really it is common sense to understand. And this is one of the things that that I just wanted to highlight, is that what Israel is doing to Gaza is guaranteed to produce very bad outcomes for the people of Israel and for the rest of the world. It's guaranteed to produce outcomes. It's guaranteed to produce very angry people. It's guaranteed to produce terrorism, because it is terrorism, and it will produce terrorism. And what you're doing is simply doing the right thing. So I just have to say, you know, thank you so much for what you're doing. It's so important.
Well, I would thank you and your listeners for your support, because what we do because of support from, as I say, people in around the world, from Australia to Norway to South Africa and, you know, throughout North America. And as you say, it is a matter of international law and fundamental rights. The right of freedom of movement is enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It's the right to move around your own country and to leave and return to your country freely. And this is something that's systematically denied to Palestinians. The blockade of Gaza is the most extreme, most egregious denial of that right. But this Palestinians everywhere, throughout Palestine, but also in the diaspora, are denied those rights systematically by the occupation. The campaign I'm most involved in, Gaza's Ark, was called Building Hope. It's still called Building Hope. Until last month, we were involved in rebuilding a shipping boat to sail outward with a civilian cargo of export goods from Gaza. We had buyers around the world whose purchased goods were going to, when the fighting stops, we're going to go to the producers in Gaza and make sure that they get the payments, even though at this point we don't have a boat there to sail outward. Our hope is that when one or more of the flotilla ships arrive, we will then again be able to say we're going to export, because there are buyers in the world. And this is a very powerful message. These are, you know, trade unionists, faith groups, student groups, community groups in all of the countries that support us, who've said, we believe in the sovereign economy for the Palestinians of Gaza. They've purchased these goods. They want to have them exported freely. not, you know, through the filter of when the occupier decides Palestinians are going to be allowed to export, but simply freely through their own port. And that's a powerful message about a sovereign economy. Every people have a right to control their own economy, and controlling your own economy means being able to import, export freely through a seaport, which they have. They have a coast on the Mediterranean. So this next campaign is called simply Open the Port of Gaza, which is the demand of civil society in Gaza, who've said, despite all the bombing, they said, we don't want another ceasefire unless there is an enforceable, an international commitment to enforce the terms of the last ceasefire, which was that the blockade was supposed to be lifted. I mean, people wonder about the current fighting and who started what when. But really, Israel violated the November 2012 ceasefire immediately. In the first 100 or 90 days, the first 3 months, they violated it multiply on the seafront by firing at Palestinians and killing Palestinians in Gaza, but also by failing to lift the blockade, which was supposed to be a term of the last one. So if you cut off hope, and I think I'm an educator, so when I finally was able to visit Gaza, I met this population, which is overwhelmingly young. More than half of the population is 18 or under. And the young people who are finishing their studies and unable to travel travel abroad to take up scholarships, they're not even able to travel within Palestine to other Palestinian universities in the West Bank. And as you say, if you take away hope from people, right, our campaign is called Building Hope. But if you take away hope from people, especially young people, the world shouldn't be surprised if some of them turn to hopeless acts, right? I mean, it's not a very complicated equation. Either people have hope or they're hopeless. So what we're doing is, rather than putting it in, you know, humanitarian terms, there's some humanitarian aid involved when you sail in this, but rather than humanitarian terms, because ultimately we're not a huge NGO, we can't supply that much stuff. But in terms of working with the Palestinians to move towards their fundamental rights, to demand their fundamental rights, is simply about that, about building hope. And building hope at this point means opening the port of Gaza to peaceful commerce with the rest of the Mediterranean and the rest of the world.
Right. And this has to occur sooner or later. It can't go on forever. Has there been any response? Are you getting any communications from Israel? Are they giving you warnings, threats? Have you got any indication of how they're going to respond?
Not as yet with the current one. And we've been, you know, we haven't made an announcement about a date other than we have a plan to sail before the end of 2014. As you can appreciate, there are a lot of logistics involved, and getting everything in order for a sailing of one or more vessels from, you know, a port in one of the countries in the region that would make that sailing feasible. Typically, the more specific threats come up when there's a date announced or something like that. But the other way to look at this is how world public opinion is changing. I mean, we've had writing by Jimmy Carter and Mary Robinson of the Elders group of international former statesmen, stateswomen, writing in places like The Guardian about how the blockade has to end in order to have a lasting peace. I mean, we've had a number of ceasefires, but none of these ceasefires can possibly last unless there's also an end to the blockade. So it's not, I mean, I'm not saying Carter's listening to us, but I'm saying, or Robinson, but I'm saying that there are these voices of reason, as you say, of simple common sense, speaking on the international stage. You know, Desmond Tutu has been supporting this all along, as has Noam Chomsky, but we're beginning to see more of more mainstream voices, which are hopefully being listened to by some of the states involved, certainly some of the European states involved, to the idea that, you know, it can't go on with this completely unbalanced situation where, for example, Israel enjoys, you know, very preferential trade deals with the European Union, while there is no free trade at all with the occupied Palestinian territories, right? So there's this completely asymmetrical, lopsided foreign policy from Europe towards Israel and Palestine, which incidentally is very profitable, right? I mean, the other thing about the occupation of Gaza is Israel has literally a captive market. We're up to 1.7, 1.8 million people. All of their basic needs, humanitarian otherwise, go through border crossings controlled by Israel and which are extremely profitable to the occupier.
That's great. Look, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for coming on today. I'm going to stay on this topic and hopefully get you on again when we have more news.
No worries. Okay, and do send us a link to the podcast.
Absolutely.
So we'll throw it on our website as well.
We'll do that. Welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herewood Fenton. A pleasure, as always, to be talking to you today. And may I take this opportunity to invite you to become one of history's actors, to join with us in our quest to bring truth, to uncover the hidden, and to do so with integrity, to counteract the litany of lies, the web of deceit that wraps around us and even now is practically choking the life out of our beautiful country and our society, turning it into some kind of parody, some kind of dystopic parody of what a democracy should be. I invite you to become a subscriber to Truth News Radio Australia. It's very easy to do. All you need to do is get your credit card out and go to our website, go to truthnews.com.au and click on the large banner that you will see. And you'll notice that you'll be able to get a t-shirt as part of becoming a subscriber. And you'll also get a DVD that we mail out to you that has a number of films and documentaries and also some other resources that I've put on there. And all for a round figure of $65 Australian plus postage, which will normally be about $7.20 if you are within continental Australia. So that's about $72 all up. And in doing so, you will have made a difference. You will have contributed to what we do. So if you like what we do on this show, if you think it's worthwhile, really, really, we do need your support. I'm not kidding around here. I've been going for 5 or 6 years without any support. I've funded it myself. I had some fairly well-paid jobs in most of that time. Things have actually changed in my own circumstances in the last year or so. I really want to continue the show, though. I want to actually make it better. I want to really get into a lot more ways of reaching people. I want to do video. We don't do video. It's just I simply don't have the time or the money to be able to do it. I would like to develop it. I would like to develop the website. I would like to get good writers on the site, just develop it in every way imaginable. But of course, that is not going to happen unless we get your contribution. It's simply not possible. So if you're ever thinking to yourself, you know, well, there's nothing I can do. What's, you know, how can I help change the situation? You feel confronted by the lies on both sides of politics. You feel that, you know, the media is untrustworthy right across the board. Well, have a look at, you know, have a look at what we do. And if you think it's good, please think about becoming a subscriber. Now, coming up in the second hour, very important interview coming up with Mimi Alaham, and we are going to be talking about the whole madness in Iraq and Syria with ISIS. We're going to be talking about Australia as well, and as a kind of a warmer for that, I want to play to you a clip from ABC talking about Tony Abbott's latest gaffe. They're criticising him a lot on the ABC and the media for using this term Team Australia. he's trying to get the Muslim leaders on board with a discussion to see how we can root out Islamic extremism in Australia and also prevent Australians from going overseas and engaging in terrorist acts, which is all fine. I've got nothing against that. And actually, I'm not against the term Team Australia either. I don't have a problem with that. But what I do have a problem with is the complete contradiction between what Tony Abbott says and what the policy of his government is. And the policy of his government is no different to the policy of the Gillard or the Rudd government. They've been fostering Islamic extremism by their posturing towards Syria for the last 4 years. They have been making it inevitable that this would develop and turn into a massive problem. But anyway, let me play to you now a little from the ABC's coverage of this kind of furore that took place over the last couple of days.
Mr. Abbott's been talking to Islamic groups to explain his move to bring in stronger anti-terror laws. And as he's been holding those meetings this week, the Islamic State extremists released the video of the beheading. The ABC's John Fain asked if other journalists and aid workers being held by Islamic State will be killed in the same way.
I certainly hope that's not the case, John, but we have to accept that the ISIL movement is as near to pure evil as we are ever likely to see. And what happened to that poor journalist was just barbaric. It was sickening, it was hideous, it was inhuman. But these people kill without compunction. They kill without compunction, and they exult in their cruelty, posting all these things up on the internet. Because their aim is to strike fear into the hearts of their opponents.
The government's looking to Islamic leaders to help ensure Australians don't become radicalised and leave to join the extremists. Mr. Abbott used the term Team Australia earlier this week, just before the first of his meetings. And the way he put it prompted the Secretary of the Islamic Council of Victoria to withdraw from the talks. Mr. Abbott's critical of that choice.
Well, obviously the most important thing is to talk, and that's why I was disappointed that a small number of Islamic leaders, community leaders, I thought in a rather foolishly boycotted that meeting. And I doubt that sort of thing will happen again because it's so self-evidently petty to do that kind of thing. You can hardly complain that people aren't talking to you, and then when you offer them a talk... say, sorry, we're not coming.
The Prime Minister stands by his use of the term.
I dare say not everyone would use the phrase, but I've used it and I'll keep using it because I expect everyone to be on Team Australia.
And the PM says some Islamic leaders have adopted the Team Australia language.
As one of the leading imams said to me at the end of one meeting, we're all part of Team Australia and you're our captain. Don't imagine that from time to time they wouldn't want a different captain. But nevertheless, that's what he said, that we're all part of Team Australia and you're our captain.
But is it a term that alienates those who are living in communities with high rates of unemployment or other social problems?
If I'm an unemployed person, regardless of my ethnicity or my religion or my background, I may well think that my country is currently letting me down or that... the world is currently not as good to me as I would like. That's very, very understandable. But in the end, what we need to do is remember that for all our imperfections here in Australia, we are a great country, and everyone here should be striving in his or her own way to do whatever he or she can to build a better world.
One of the issues Victorian Islamic leader Gaith Graham gave for boycotting the meeting was that Mr. Abbott's description of a migrant community was incorrect, as nearly half of those he represents are born in Australia. But today Mr. Abbott is continuing to highlight migrants.
The point I keep making in all of my discussions with migrant groups is that you chose us. You chose us. You voted confidence in Australia. That makes you first-class citizens of your new home. You've chosen our country in a way that the native-born haven't.
That's the Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, ending that report from political correspondent Louise Yaxley.
Now, let me just comment on this. Tony Abbott comes across as an eminently reasonable man. And he seems to be genuine. He really does. It feels like he's coming from a place where he's speaking from the heart. He's thinking about what he's saying and he's telling you what he thinks. And actually, what he says is accurate. It's just what he doesn't say that is so important. The Islamic insurgency in Iraq and in Syria and in Libya has not really been simply the product of a fanatical religious motivation or movement. This is a completely factually incorrect representation of what has been going on. Not to dispute that there are many, indeed most, of those involved are fanatical Islamists. They have been drawn to it, they have been magnetized to it, but the nucleus of it that began in the 80s, really, with the fostering of Islamism as a bulwark against Soviet Russia. That's how it began. And it was seeded with a lot of money, and many of the key players in it are not by any means Islamists. They are mercenaries. There are huge numbers of mercenaries. And of course, they bring money, and this brings more people towards the groups. And indeed, because they overtly say that they are part of this fundamentalist Islam movement, a lot of the marginalized in any society will be drawn to that, like any cult. It's just a cult, folks. But the whole thing is being controlled. When we come back from break, my guest Mimi Alaham will be delving into this in a lot more depth with me. So do stay tuned for hour two. It's going to be a really, really interesting discussion. And in the meantime, why not head on over to Truth News Radio Australia and become a subscriber? It'll only take you about 2 or 3 minutes. We'll be right back after this short break. Don't go away.